My name is Richard Lamparski, and my guest today, I think we've discussed him on this program, well, several times. One, quite recently, when Dan Healy was on, and another time when his old partner and sidekick and a friend of mine, Jack Pearl, was on the program, because his name is Cliff Hall, and he was associated with Mr. Pearl for a great many years, was the famous Charlie. Were you the original Charlie in the routine?
I don't know whether you know it or not, but it is quite accidental that the name Charlie.
No, tell me, I don't.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Billy K. Wells wrote our script, and although I'd known him for a good many years, he forgot my first name. And when he was writing the script, the first name that came into his head was, he'd put Jack and then Charlie. And instead
it stuck.
Cliff.
Yeah.
And it just happened that the way Jack said Charlie happened to hit the ear. It was one of those happy happenstances. And that's the way it happened, really. If he'd said, "Was you there, Cliff?" nothing would have happened, probably.
It's funny how that stuck, because you still hear it today. I heard someone use it recently, and I'm sure they don't even remember Jack Pearl.
Well, they've got to be on in years.
Yeah. Well, they must have picked it up, you see, from their parents, because they were in their early 20s. And as a matter of fact, I think I asked them, you know Jack.
Well, when we were at a heyday, it was quite a saying all over the country. Of course, all over the world, as a matter of fact. Mark Hellinger just said he heard it in Shanghai.
I was, I'm going to call his wife, his widow, who is Gladys Glad.
Gladys Glad, yeah.
Yeah, she's still around town.
She was on a show with Jack and me.
Really?
Oh, yes, the Ziegfeld Follies. The last one that Ziegfeld did.
Uh-huh. That was about 31 or so,
yes,
wasn't
30,
it?
Yes, 30 and 31.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet Jack Pearl? How did it get started?
Well, that's also a strange incident. I was a young married actor at the time, and my wife was going to have a baby, or rather had the baby. And we were doing a two-act at the time. And that summer, I had been in the palace with Willie Howard, and Jack had seen me and complimented me about working with Willie. And also was on the palace bill the second time with Bert Lahr. I became a kind of a standard straight man going in there with comedians. And things were very black for me right about this time.
No was work. This in the 20s, Mr. Hall?
Yes, this was, well, it was 30, the early part of 30. And I was sitting in a speakeasy.
Well, things, of course, were not too good all over in 1930.
Yes, of course it was. Quite depressing then. And I wasn't working, and there was a party for Jans and Whalen upstairs in this club that I was in. And I wouldn't go up to it. I was too down. I wouldn't drink or anything. And Jack came downstairs and saw me sitting there, and he said, "What are you doing? Are you doing anything?" And I said, "No, I'm just sitting here feeling sorry for myself." He said, "You want to go in the palace with me?" I said, "Sure." We shook hands, and we went in the palace, and from then on, I was with Jack. No contract or anything. Never had a contract.
How long were you with him?
Well, I'm still with him if he does anything.
I don't remember Jack Pearl without you. I've never heard his name.
No, from then on, it was me. He had, of course, his big thing before that was Bard and Pearl. They were a team. And then he had three or four straight men in shows, different shows and things. So I stayed with him then. We did a couple of shows. We did a lot of vaudeville right at the beginning. And then while we were at the Capitol, this Munchausen script came along. We had auditioned for several radio shows. Nothing ever happened. It was all strange to us, you know. Well, we did the Ziegfeld Follies of the Air. After the Ziegfeld Follies, Eddie Dowling had a thing with Mr. Ziegfeld was on it. It was the last thing he did, incidentally. And we were on it about seven or eight times during that summer. And that was the only radio show. But we couldn't understand reading from scripts and everything. We would walk through the park and put a routine together and go on and do it. Eddie said, "We want 5 minutes." We'd do 5 minutes. He'd give me a single, and I'll go into the last joke, you know. And we couldn't understand these people reading songs and reading scripts. Never memorized anything, you know. We couldn't get used to that. But anyway, as I said, we were at the Capitol when we went over to NBC and auditioned a script that Billy K. Wells wrote, the modern Baron Munchausen.
That was one of the first radio comic hits, wasn't it? You were quite early in radio.
Well, no. There'd been several. Cantor and Wynn had been on.
Uh-huh.
And we were the first one to ever have an audience, I believe.
A studio audience.
Studio audience. And anyway, we did our first... They piped it through to George Washington Hill, the American Tobacco Company, and bought it right away. And we did our first show at 711 Fifth Avenue in a little studio with about 100 people in it. And then they moved us to the Amsterdam Roof. And that's where we... And all of a sudden, in 2 or 3 weeks, it was a household word. Nobody knew how. It was one of those things that just happened. And then we just rolled along on top.
I think it's nice that you still see Jack Pearl and you're friendly.
Oh, gosh, yes.
The reason I say that is so often, I think, comedy teams like Martin
and Jack got this terrible bug in his head, and it's his own fault that he's not on because he's a great sight comedian.
He told me it was his own fault. He said he didn't want to do it.
Absolutely.
He wants to act.
He would go on and do a dramatic bit for nothing, but he'd insist on $3,000 or $4,000 for a comedy thing. And he was just a bug on doing a dramatic show for why nobody knows. He wanted to make people cry instead of laugh, which is ridiculous.
I know. He told me he was, as a matter of fact, I thought he was a little bit bitter about it. He said, you know, Milton Berle can do drama. Jack Benny, they even let do serious. He said, why not me? Why not Jack Pearl?
Well, it is, when you come to consider, he spent the best part of his life being known as one of the best dialecticians in the country. And all of a sudden, he wanted to throw it up and do King Lear, you know. As a matter of fact, he did King Lear on radio.
A serious version?
Yes, of course, of course. And he did Haim Solomon on radio, which was a very serious thing. And then he did a play, which was god-awful. I went to Baltimore to see it. He was good in it, but it was such a terrible melodrama, you know. And, but he was so stubborn. Even that didn't lick him. He insisted he was as good as Muni or anybody. Nothing would stop him, but he never got the chance.
Fortunately, he can afford not to.
Oh, of course, but I couldn't.
So what I was going to say is I think it's, you know, it's nice that you were friends and remained friends because so many of the comedy teams, Abbott and Costello, evidently never really got along very well.
Oh, no, they were bitter enemies towards the finish.
And I thought of another team, Martin and Lewis, of course.
Yes.
Didn't very well.
But they've done well alone.
Yes, yeah, very well.
And I have no complaints. I got going in the theater, and I had 2 or 3 big hits on the road. I was in No Time for Sergeants for 20 months, and then got Music Man and stayed 3 years and 7 months in Music Man.
Did you ever get, at the height of your fame when you were with Mr. Pearl all the time, did you ever get tired of being the straight man? Do you ever want to be funny?
No. That was one thing that everybody complimented me about, because I never tried to be funny. I never was a light comedy. I was a light straight man. I never smacked them around like some of them did, you know, like Costello used to hit. Abbott used to hit Costello. You couldn't do that with Jack. He'd kill you. No, I used to enjoy my comics. I'd laugh at them. I'd really enjoy them.
Well, they were funny. Tell me about the time you pulled a little joke on Jack Pearl on radio.
Oh, well, that was well into the series when everybody knew the saying, and I never told him I was going to do it. I just did it. I took a chance because it was a big show, you know, and nobody knew what would happen to him. But it turned out very funny. He told a big lie. I forget what the story was, and then. Of course, I wouldn't believe him, and he said, was your day Charlie? And I looked at him a minute and said, yes. And he was astounded. And he said, "You was there?" I said, "I certainly was." "Well," he said, "I bet." By that time, Abe Lyman, who was our orchestra leader, was rolling on the floor laughing.
And this was live, of course.
Yeah. And the audience was in hysterics because his face was just something to see. And I began to laugh. Lord knows how we got back in the script again, but we did. But the strange part of it was that that was so big that several of the advertising people, you know, and the writers and so forth, they, you know, said, "Let's do it again, you know, sometime, plan it." So a couple of weeks later, we did it again, planned. It was in the script. Nothing happened. It wasn't funny at all because he never could get that face. So that was...
He was not an ad-libber, I take it.
Well, Jack had things to do if you ad-lib with him. God help you. I mean, he wouldn't do jokes with you. Or nothing that in the way of words, but his sputtering. Jack's great timing of comedy, and when he was mad, he was funniest. Because it seemed like his hair would stand on end, you know, and he's got a mop of hair anyway. And when he sputters in that German dialect, you know, he'd get away with murder. You couldn't ad-lib with him.
I think it would be interesting for young people who are listening if we were to play a portion of one of your old routines, which I understand you haven't heard in quite a while. This is courtesy of the Longines Sinfonette people. They put out a record of many of the old radio personalities, comedy routines, news broadcasts, and so forth. And this is Jack Pearl, alias Baron von Munchausen, and my guest today, Cliff Hall. I think it was recorded about 35 years ago.
Well, well, Baron, I'm delighted to see you.
Well, Charlie, of all the people in the whole world.
I haven't seen you in a long time. Where you been?
I just come back from the design.
Oh, you did,
huh? Yeah, I just come back.
How'd you get over here?
I came over on a ship.
How was the food aboard the ship, Baron?
Food was just so-so.
Oh, just so-so.
You know something, Charlie? With every meal, I had to eat soup.
With every meal you had to eat soup?
I had to eat soup.
Was it compulsory?
You see, I was... Hello?
I say, was it compulsory?
No. Tomatoes.
Oh, tomatoes.
We didn't have compulsory.
Oh, say, by the way, just a moment. Did you know that Jimmy Durante has been looking all over this theater for you with a gun?
What do you mean? He's looking for me with a revolver?
What?
I say he's looking for me with a revolver?
With a revolver, yes.
Why he's looking for me, why?
Well, he said that you called him a dirty name.
I called him a dirty name?
He said that you swore it.
Oh, what a liar! Fucking...
Now, don't get excited. You'll get high blood pressure.
No, not me. I'm anemic.
Oh,
no.
Sure.
I give you my solemn word, I never called him a dirty name, and I never swore at him.
Well, then how did it happen?
Here's how that comes out, just like it was.
All right.
What day is this today?
Today?
Yeah.
Today is Sunday.
Sunday, that was 4 days back. That was Wednesday. You see, I'm going out with my...
Wait a minute, what day did you say?
Wednesday.
No.
I was going...
You mean Wednesday?
Yeah, in the center of the week, like, you know what
I mean? Wednesday, named after the god Woden.
No. Oh. Wednesday is named after Tuesday.
Oh. Well,
you see, Wednesday, I was going in the country with my car.
I see.
Well, driving...
Wait a minute. Tell me, what time of the day was this?
Oh, this was maybe 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock a.m. or p.m.?
So I'm going... What?
I say, was it 9 o'clock a.m. or p.m.?
So I'm going out in my car.
Why don't you answer my question? Was it 9 o'clock a.m. or p.m.?
No, no, no. That's not nice.
What's not nice?
Now, I don't like that. Now, you hear that? Now,
what are you talking about?
Now, I know what that is. Now, say that.
You do. All right. Wait a minute.
Now, I don't like
it. You know what it is?
Yeah.
Well, what is it?
About the farmer's daughter. No. I don't like...
Jack Pearl contributed Vajudare.
That's still funny. What, about 35 years ago, right?
Oh, we did it before then. That was a routine we did in vaudeville before we went on the air.
Did he use a wear a costume?
As the Baron, yes.
Yes, he did. Yes. Well, what sort of was it?
Well, during the radio days, he wore whatever he was doing. It used to be a character like a lumberjack or a diver, deep sea diver, and he'd wear the whole outfit, you know. Whatever he was doing, a hunter, like hunting big game in Africa, he'd have a big hunting outfit on. Oh, yes, he dressed the part.
I never saw the movie, Meet the Baron.
You should be very happy.
Oh, really?
He had every comic on the MGM lot in that with him. I got hurt, you know. I wasn't in it.
No, I didn't know you weren't
in it. No, I went out to do it, and I got in an automobile accident about the time they were starting to shoot. And Ben Bard, his old partner, did my part. Uh-huh. But they cut the whole thing down. All he did was a broadcasting sequence.
I'm going to the coast in about 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be doing a lot of the people I guess you knew or worked with, certainly contemporaries of yours and Mr. Pearl's, Billy Gilbert, Benny Rubin.
Benny.
Cliff Edwards.
Good Lord.
Ukulele Ike. I didn't even know he was alive until someone told me that the other day.
Benny is in the home, I understand. He's in the
Motion Picture Country Hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as a matter of fact, he called me. I was out there a couple of years ago, and he called me and told me he was going in. And at first I was shocked, and then he explained it to me. He said, it's the best thing for me. It's a beautiful place.
It's a nice place to be.
And I have all the freedom in the world. I can go any place I want. So he's done several Joey Bishop shows since then, you know. And Benny was a clever man. Still is. He can still dance.
Really, because he's on in years, isn't
yes.
he? Yeah.
Still not as old as I am.
That's a wonderful organization, that Motion Picture Relief.
Well, we have them here, you know.
Yes, I know you do.
Englewood is a beautiful home.
A friend of mine told us.
Yeah, it's fun. Joe Smith is over there in Smith and Dale.
Yes, I knew that, yeah. And he's in my next book, as a matter of fact.
It's just beautiful. Beautiful. I live over in Jersey.
A friend of mine told me a cute story about the Motion Picture Fund. He was, or rather she, was a silent star, told me this a number of years ago. She was being visited by an old cameraman of hers who'd been in the business for years. And I don't think he was any longer a cameraman. I think he was assistant director or something around the studios. And he worked from time to time. But he hadn't worked this particular period for quite a while. And he'd been to see her, and he said, it was wonderful. He said, you know, I went over and borrowed $400 from the Motion Picture Relief Fund. And she said, well, why did you borrow that amount of money? Because you have unemployment compensation. And you, well, he said, I have, I bought a Cadillac on time. And he said, I had to make the payments. Well, she said, what did you tell them it was for? He said, for a Cadillac. Oh, she said, I don't believe that they would loan you money to make payments on a Cadillac. He said, oh, yes. He said, you know, this fund is administered by people in the business. They realize that you can't get a job unless you pull into the Paramount or the Fox lot in a Cadillac or a Jaguar. This is like having your suit pressed.
Yeah.
You can't drive
status.
Around in a Ford on the coast.
Status, yes.
Only in Hollywood would that be understood.
That's true.
Yeah, I'll probably have dinner with at Dave Chasen's.
Yeah.
Who a lot of people don't know. He was the straight man for Joe Cook, right?
He wasn't a straight man. He was a stooge. He never opened his mouth.
A stooge? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. He was a very funny little fella. Dave, Joe used to throw things at him, you know. He was a little bitty guy and dressed in funny clothes. Did scenes with Joe. Oh, yes. I think Cook stardom was a great influence in him starting the business out there.
Well, it's a very good restaurant, as you probably know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, you mentioned a name recently, a few minutes ago, that has always intrigued me, Eddie Dowling. Now, what does he do now?
Eddie, he comes in the club occasionally. He's a producer, you know, more than he's an actor.
Mm-hmm. Is he still producing that?
Well, I think he tries. I think he had a play last year that didn't do well. What was the last play he had? It was a big, big hit. I think they made a musical of it last year. Something about it in a pawn shop. It was a translation from the Austrian or French.
Oh, I think I know the one you meant, Mina. As a matter of fact, I think a friend of mine did the book, Joe Masteroff.
I forget.
Was it from the movie Shop Around the Corner?
The Shop Around the Corner.
Was it called She Loves Me?
Well, no. The original play was The Shop Around the Corner, I believe.
Yeah, but I mean in the musical version. Was it She Loves Me?
I don't remember.
It was a name like that, yeah.
I think Richard Rodgers did the music to it.
Uh-huh.
And it played quite a while on Broadway.
I didn't know that was one of his shows. What about Ray Dooley? Did she come in?
No, that's his wife.
I know, no. Did she come into town?
No, I don't believe so.
She was a very good comedian, I understand.
Very
I never
funny
saw
girl.
Her.
Very funny girl.
And she had a brother, I believe.
Yes, he was a funny guy, too. The Dooleys.
Well, you work now in the theater. You're an actor, as you say. Is there much of a change in attitude as compared to your day? Are the actors as dedicated and in the same way?
Well, I think they're more dedicated now in a way. Of course, the realism in plays nowadays, the younger element have a much better chance. As a matter of fact, I haven't worked in a long time. There hasn't been anything for me. But the present-day theater is youth now.
You think that's good?
Well, it's got to be. Well, let's face it, when I was a young fellow, the old guys used to say that about us. So, I mean, it never changes. Old actors will always squawk about the youth.
Well, I hear a lot of them say, well, business isn't fun anymore, though.
Well, it isn't the fun it used to be. Let's put it that way. There's not the glamour to it now. The average layman knows your salary, you know, through television, they know everything. There's a lady I know over where I live, and she has that television set on from morning till night. She watches all the gossip shows, you know. She knows everything, much more than I do about show business. Much more. And this is what's changed a lot, too, I think, as far as the public is concerned. And the Princess Art Club, the Lambs Club, this sounds like an old actor squawking, but it's true. I just happened to say to Peggy in back of the desk, who's been there for years, I said, Peg, what's become of the big names we used to have in the club? She said, I don't know. We haven't got any anymore. It's true. I used to walk into that bar and the grill, and you'd see the biggest names in show business. Big, fabulous people like the Barrymores and Gillette and all the big, big stars of the day. And then when you come to realize it's a different type of living, those people all lived in hotels in New York. There's no other place to go but your club.
Yes, that's right. Most people were on the road if they worked a lot.
Now, if they were on the road, it's different. But very few actors had property in those days, you know, homes, real homes. Now everybody's got a home.
I hadn't thought of that, but now, would Jackie Gleason and Ed Sullivan, would they be members? Would they come in?
Well, I'm talking many, many years before
But I mean now, or are they, would you see them?
I think Gleason's a friar. I don't think he's a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I know he isn't. Ed is a lamb, but you don't see them. They never come in the club. You do see television names, but not the real big ones.
Well, you see, a lot of the people I'm interested in, Ricardo Cortez, I think, is a lamb,
isn't
he?
Oh, yes, he's a lamb.
And who else? I'm trying to... Arthur Tracy, street singer.
Yeah, he's a lamb.
He's there most of the time, I think.
Well, he hasn't been in late. I think he's doing some summer stock or something. I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks, months.
He dyed his hair, and he said he was...
Arthur made a lot of money, you know, during the boom in Washington in real estate.
Yes, he told me he did.
Oh, yes.
But he still wants to work. Now, there's someone who will tell you right out that he wants to work.
And he goes to England, and he's a tremendous hit over there, much more than he is here. Because they never forget in England.
Isn't that funny? No, I know they don't, because...
You can leave there and be gone for 20 years. If you've been a big hit there 20 years ago and go back, you're still a big hit.
Yeah, it's very nice. They're very nice.
The theater goers there.
Yeah, but they remember. A lot of these silent stars I know go there, and they say there's no place like London.
No.
They treat you just the same as you were a star today.
It's true. It's true. And backstage, it's so nice for the actor. I mean, you're treated like a gentleman, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what's... Of course, there'll always be a theater. things change, so you have to go along with the changes. I don't think Jack Burrell does.
No, he makes no bones about it.
No, he says there's no talent anymore.
Don't you think he misses performing?
He must. Yes, he does. And, you know, this routine that you just heard, about 7 or 8 weeks ago, they gave us a night at the Lambs Club. Even though Jack wasn't a lamb, I am. For dinner on Tuesday night, you know. And we went on, we did that routine. And you never heard such laughs in your life. And it's the oldest thing we do. Absolutely the oldest thing. As a matter of fact, some of it goes back to the Bard days, before I went with him.
It's funny, you know, you're mentioning, talking about things changing and the theater changing. I saw quite recently Hair. Now, that's about as dramatic as a departure for a musical. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
As I've ever seen in my life. It's an entirely different concept. In theater, to begin with, you go in, the curtain's up. But down, it's up. And the actors walk on stage, and they talk to the audience, and they talk to each other. And I found it a very effective show. But, and what reminded me of this, was your voice. It's such a great actor's voice. You can hear every syllable you say. I couldn't hear them.
You couldn't?
No, and I think we spent $13 a piece for the seats, and I was right down front, and I've got very good hearing, and I missed a lot of the lines.
Is the stage amplified, too?
It's amplified, yeah.
Strange.
But they are not training actors to speak properly. They train them to dance. They train them to sing. They train them to move better. I think, by and large, the actors
Which
are better today.
Which makes the British actor so supreme.
Yes.
Because they're great, as far as the diction is concerned. And, of course, we were brought up without microphones, so we had to project.
Yeah, it was the first thing you learned.
Sure.
And evidently, it's the last thing
you
learned.
You had to be
learned.
Heard up in the last row of the gallery.
It's a shame, because a lot of the lines I missed I knew were funny, because a few people would hear them, either that or they know them from the records, and they would scream, but I'd say it was a small percentage of the audience.
I saw a great show the other night that I enjoyed so much, The Price.
The Arthur Miller play, yes.
Yes, now with Davy Burns in it, it's just wonderful. And it's a strange thing about that, too. I read to understudy, not him, but when he was sick, and they put Harold Garry in, who was his understudy, you know. They were stuck for an understudy, and they were reading a lot of people, and I read for it. Didn't get it, but when I read it then, I said, this is the greatest part I've ever read in my life for a character actor, and it is. It's just, yeah, but the way Davy does it, who?
He's a fine actor.
Oh, superb. Every line is a gem.
Is that heartbreaking when you read something and you know it's good and you want to do it and you don't? Because it happens so often, even to the best.
Well, I wasn't too impressed in being the understudy, you know. It's a rather thankless job in the first place. But it was a job. As it happened, I never would have gotten on. Gary didn't miss the show. But Davy went back in it, you know, as soon as he looked well. But he missed that opening night, which hurt him terribly. Because he was looking forward to that. He knew he was going to tear people apart.
It was a great boost to the other fellow's career, though, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know whether he hasn't done anything since.
Well, I read in one article that he had just about doubled his price.
Well, of course, they yanked his price way up when he took the job. He still didn't get what Burns is getting. But he more than doubled his salary, I imagine. But that, in a way, it hurts. Now he can't take a little job. He can't lower his price.
Next week I have a guest coming on who is in no way theatrical, and yet I think he did something rather dramatic. His name is Arthur Morris, and he was the man who started the Morris Plan. Remember the Morris Plan?
Yes.
That was the very first...
That was the start of the financing.
The very first one, yeah. Everyone told him he was crazy, I understand, at the time,
yeah.
And that It was going to ruin working people because they couldn't make the payments, and look what happened. I guess it's probably the basis of our economy today. Just about.
Of course. Always finance companies based on that, Morris.
Yeah. Remember the old expression, did you buy it on tick?
Yeah.
You heard that today? Cliff Hall, it's been very pleasant talking with you. You had a lot of stories,
well,
in spite of you told me you didn't think you had, but you did.
I hope it was interesting. I'm always a little afraid of these things because, I don't know, I'm not a funny man. Sometimes I don't think it's very interesting to talk about things that seem so ordinary to me.
How long have you been in show business now?
Uh-huh.
Don't want to tell.
Since 1910.
1910.
58 years.
Well, congratulations. I hope you have many more of them.
Well, I can't have too many more. Let's face it.
My guest today has been Mr. Cliff Hall, one of show business's best remembered and most loved straight men. This is Richard Lamparski. I want to thank you for listening. Good night.